So if the person has made any kind of research, which research is against the research of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because the research of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam was not looking into books and studying some kind of undertaking some kind of a course at a university and getting some kind of degree for psychiatry and psychology. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, everything was from wahi. Now if Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala informed him that this is haram, it is forbidden, then I've explained many times in my majlises that anything that is haram, anything, take anything and everything that Allah and His Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam have declared as haram. So you will find that either it is harmful to the individual, harmful to the family, or harmful to the society, harmful to the nation. Everything you can take across the board, anything that has been made haram, it is harmful to the individual, harmful to the family, society, or the nation, or even the whole world. Take alcohol. Now their research has itself proven that alcohol is very harmful, very injurious to health. And the harm of that is not only limited to the individual, but it goes across to the family, and sometimes when the person drinks in excess, then it becomes a big problem for the society. Look at the aeroplane problems that they are having with passengers who become drunk. Now they know that, but still they will make some research and they will tell you that, but if you drink to this extent or that extent or this quantity or that quantity, then it will not be injurious to your health. In fact, sometimes they say that it will help you. In the same way, if you take gambling, now definitely there is some benefit in gambling. The person that was poor, he became rich overnight. The person who had nothing, he spent 1-2 rands on a lotto ticket and he became millionaire. So there is a little bit of benefit in taking a chance. But then Allah Ta'ala knows the harm that this person will start off with. That then he'll go more and more deeper into it until finally he'll have to sell his house and his last pair of shirt too. And look at the people who have got, who got caught up in the casinos, where in the beginning or initial stages they were allowed even credit facilities and everything because they were of a very good ranking. And but afterwards those same people, they put mafia on them to go and blast them if they don't pay up the debts. Now those people can't even pay. We have cases of where people had to sell their houses, they had to sell everything that belonged to them just to pay up their debts. So Shariat prohibited that which will lead to problems, which will harm the person. The same with pork. So if all these things which have been prohibited, if you have to look at them, no matter what kind of research you come up with, you will come to conclusion that it is harmful. All these things, everyone who has got a little bit of sense in him, he will come to only one conclusion, that it is harmful to the individual, family, society, or nation. So if that Nabi of Allah, who in his wisdom or because of the wahi that he received, informed not only the Muslim Ummah but mankind at large that these are the things which are harmful to your spiritual, physical, mental self. It is harmful. It is something that will cause you harm. Therefore, you must abstain from it. Now, that Nabi of Allah Ta'ala, who informed correctly and very, very correctly and extremely accurately about these aspects, that liquor is haram, this is haram, that is haram, that is haram. And as I said, that every sane person and intelligent person will come to only one conclusion, that there is definitely harm in all those things. So when he declared masturbation as haram or forbidden, so then definitely we come to only one conclusion, that there is definitely serious harm in it. There's serious harm for the individual, and sometimes there's serious harm in fact for the family when he gets married. And there's so many other kinds of problems that he suffers. It is physical, mental, spiritual harm that he suffers. Therefore, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam prohibited it. So all this research that they do, it is because they are so engrossed and so involved in all these type of sins that they have to find justification. So for justification, they do research. And in the research, they come up with a lot of things which after a few years again, they change. And they say that, no, that research of ours Now we made a little bit of mistake there, and our new conclusions are this. And every day they're coming up with new conclusions and new research. It reminds me again of that research that one time they did, and where they said that all the vitamins of the apple are in the apple itself. So you must peel the apple and eat the core. Afterwards, the new research was that the vitamins are in the peel. So you must eat the apple with the peel. So Sahibanul Nazat Mullah Sayyid Ahmad Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, he said very soon they will come up with a new research. They throw the apple away, eat the peel only, because all the vitamins are in the peel. So he said that is the kind of research they got. Just now they'll make us throw the apples in this. Then take for example cholesterol. I was traveling in a flight, and there I met up with one scientist. He was a scientist from Europe. I happened to sit next to each other, and I was talking about heart problem and cholesterol and things like that. And he did medical research on all these type of issues. So he tells me, he says, as far as eggs are concerned, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. You can have one egg a day comfortably. Whereas everyone else will tell you that if you've got heart problem and cholesterol, then one egg a week is sufficient. So now he comes up with once a week is no problem. And then he says that even in certain cases, even if they have more than that, there's no problem. Now you can see there, in everything, if you look at all the advices that we are given, that you should eat this, you shouldn't eat that, you should take this, you shouldn't take that. After some research, again it's changed. So we as believers in Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, we must believe truly and sincerely that anything that Allah and His Nabi Alayhi Salatu Wasallam have declared as haram or forbidden or sinful, then definitely it is harmful to the individual, to his family or to the society. Now with regards to this particular aspect, there is research of great, great hukama of the time, of the past, right from the time of Jalinus and all it had carrying on. There's so much of research that has been done, that why did Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam forbid masturbation. Now if you have to look at all those researches of theirs, which was by not ordinary hakims or these scientists and our medical practitioners and all, today there's so much of chancing. But these people were such masters at medicine. In fact, they learned from them. Most of it, what they have in the form of research now, is translation of most of those books that were in the libraries of Spain and Baghdad and so many places. So they have taken all these things from there. Now look at their research. Their research says that those people who indulge in this, they will end up with pains in the joints, they will end up with backaches, they will end up with weak sight, they will end up with weak memory, they will end up with mental imbalance, they will end up with blurred visions, and so many other whole list of things. Of course, it is not that everybody that suffers from these things is because of that, but they say that the harm of that. And if you have to ask students today at universities, ask at colleges, ask them at the high schools, ask them in the Darul Ulooms and in the madrasas, wherever a person has got this kind of a habit, the complaint is generally loss of memory, weakness, no concentration, we are, you know, not getting any kind of contentment and satisfaction in our lives, and then there's all kinds of pains and aches, and then they cannot keep their wuzu, and then they've got problem about urine drops all the time. Now, all these type of sicknesses and diseases that are coming, the major cause of that is what they are indulging. So whatever Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam has declared as haram and forbidden, then we must come to the conclusion that there is definitely, you know, great wisdom in that, and definitely, most certainly, those things are injurious and harmful to us. That is why he has prohibited it. Then we don't take all the other research. Otherwise, if you go by research, then one lecturer at the university, he told the students, some years ago the students came and told me, he says, Mawlana, this is what the person said. He says that the Muslim community, because they go too much by the book, he's a non-Muslim lecturer, he said they go too much by their book, that fornication is forbidden, adultery forbidden, you must lower your gaze, you must do this, do that, whatever, I mean, he understood, he must have explained to them. So he says, now this is the major cause of depression today. Now that's his research. The major cause of depression is that you are not fulfilling your passions as they come. There is some desire that came into your heart. Now you're suppressing that desire. So that's the cause of depression. Now will we accept his research now? That the cause of depression is that you're not indulging in sin. If you complete the sin and you go ahead with it and you satisfy your urge and your evil passion and desire, then your depression will go because you have given vent to your passion. Now that's his research. Now he's telling the Muslim students that this is the cause of your depression. Whereas for us it is exactly the opposite. Yes, for the non-Muslim probably that might be the case, because this dunya is jannat for him, so he must enjoy himself in haram, halal, there's no borders for him. But for the Muslim, the more he's going to indulge in sin, the more depression he's going to create. Take all those people who are suffering from depression, and to ward off their depression, they switch on the television and sit all night. And then ask them, that did the depression go or did it increase? And I can take qasam in this masjid and tell you that I didn't find one person who, after I asked him, said his depression went. In fact, it increased. It must increase, because the mizaj of nafs is the mizaj of Jahannam. The mizaj of our nafs is the mizaj of Jahannam. And what is the mizaj of Jahannam? What is the nature of Jahannam? The nature of Jahannam is يَوْمَ نَقُولُ لِجَهَنَّمَ هَلِمْ تَلَأَتِ وَتَقُولُ هَلْ مِنْ مَزِيدٍ. When Jahannam will be asked, are you full now? The Jahannam will say, is there any more? He'll never be full until Allah Ta'ala, whatever that qadam of his is, we don't understand all that. But Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam says Allah Ta'ala will put his qadam on there. That means his tajalli, he will cast his tajalli. Then after that Jahannam will say, qat qat, enough, enough. So nothing will fill Jahannam until that happens. So it shows the mizaj and the nature of Jahannam is that it doesn't get satisfied. It needs more. So the mizaj of the nafs is exactly the same thing. The person masturbates once, he'll never be satisfied. Then he wants to continue until finally he'll ruin himself. It'll come to the stage where this person will then become a mental wreck. Or outwardly he may be looking alright, but internally he's got no peace and he's got restlessness and anxiety. So it's not natural instinct is there, that is why that person must get married or he must keep fast. That is what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said, that the person must keep fast or he must get married, one of the two things. But if he's going to satisfy this type of craving of his, then it's going to increase, and after that it's going to become exactly like the Jahannam. That Hazrat Mawlana Tanvi Rahmatullah Alayhi says that if a person has to be told that you saw all the pretty women in the world, everyone, you satisfied yourself, you saw everyone, but there's one left only now. Are you satisfied now? You saw all the millions. There's only one left you haven't seen, so forget about it. He'll say, no, show me that one too. That's his mizaj. So the mizaj of the nafs is that. Now to stop that rot and to arrest that rot, there is only one thing, and that is, as Jalaluddin Rumi Rahmatullah Alayhi says, that what extinguished the fire of Namrud? Namrud lit up the fire for Hazrat Ibrahim Alayhi Salatu Wasalam, and threw Hazrat Ibrahim Alayhi Salatu Wasalam, or had him thrown via the cannon into the fire. And he says, what cooled that fire? That fire that was lit up, what cooled it? It was Noor-e Khuda. It was the Noor of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala which was in the heart of Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salatu wasalam, and when he went with that Noor of Khuda into that fire, so it extinguished that fire. So this fire of Jahannam which is burning in our hearts, the whole purpose of this Ramadan and Atikaf and the Tilawat and Zikr and Ibadat and Duas is to get that stage where we have the courage, we have the strength to suppress these evil cravings that come into our hearts. It's natural instinct is there. I mean, if there was no natural instinct, then the person wouldn't have got married also. Shariat would have made it haram to get married. So there is a natural instinct. But like that, there's a natural instinct to eat also. Now when the instinct is there to eat, so we are allowed to eat. But then we can't eat this, we can't eat that, we can't eat that. There are lots of things that we can't eat. And there are so many things we can eat. The instinct is there to drink. I mean, nobody can say there's no instinct to drink. We have got the desire to drink, we get thirsty, we want to drink. But now when you want to drink, then you drink water, you drink apple juice, you drink pineapple juice, you drink all the different kinds of cold drinks that are permissible. And all that. What I'm getting at is that this instinct is there, but the whole purpose of this Ramadan and all the ibadat is to bring those instincts under control, that we are not the masters. Master is Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We will ask our master that, is this permissible? Is it haram? Is it jais? Is it not jais? Again, that beautiful example of that little child that was brought once to Hazrat Mullah Hakimullah Akhtar Sahib Damat Barakatuhum, there in the madrasa. So he gave him a toffee, a sweet. So that little child in the hand of the father turned his head away and didn't accept that toffee. Normally the children will take it, but this child, but lots of children, when they see a stranger, suddenly they saw a stranger, so he turned his face away and clung on to the father. So now the father told the child, accept it, take it. Hazrat is giving you a toffee, take it. So the child extended his hand and took the toffee. Now to us again, as I keep on saying, that we must take lessons from everything that is happening around. Now to us that means nothing. That is just one of those things that happen in everyday life. Children sometimes accept, sometimes reject. It carries on like that. But here in this particular instant, I said, look, this child, what a lesson it has taught us. That when I gave this sweet and toffee to this child, the child didn't accept it because I was a stranger. I was a stranger. And children are taught that you mustn't accept anything from strangers. So the child looked first towards his Abba, his father. When the Abba said, take it, then the child took it. So you see, this child has taught us a lesson that before we take anything, in other words, before we do anything, here the child is looking at its Abba. So we must look at our Rabbah, look at our Allah, our sustainer, our creator, our master. We must ask him, Ya Allah, is this jais for me or not? Is this permissible for me or not? Is this halal for me or haram? Now if Allah Ta'ala says, yes, accept it, it is halal for you, then we'll make shukr and make use of it. If the person is married, now he will fulfill that instinct of his, but Allah has said it is halal, is jais, so he will accept it. If the person is eating any kind of food or drinking some kind of liquid, which Allah Ta'ala has said is halal, then he will accept it. If Allah Ta'ala says haram, then he will reject it. Irrespective of what the research of the entire nation is, and all the scientists of the world put together, whatever they research, but he will say, Allah Ta'ala has informed me, or Allah Ta'ala has commanded me to do this, so this is halal and there is benefit in it, and if it is haram, there is not beneficial. For example, they say to sleep with the socks is very bad for health. Now that is the research of medical scientists. To sleep with your socks is bad for your circulation and for health and for this and for... I read one whole article on the harm of wearing a socks and going to sleep. Now that was the research. When this matter was brought forward to Hazrat Maulana Abrarul Haq Sahib Damat Barakatuhum, now look at the Ahlullah. He said, jhoot hai, bilkul jhoot hai, sarahatan jhoot hai. Now, he didn't even wait to listen to more about the research, that what is the basis of the research. He straight away said, bilkul jhoot hai, sarahatan jhoot. Now people said, when these people have made such a research and you're just rejecting his research without any... He said, jab Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam ne ijazat di hai to wear the moza, we know the maslas of moza, this leather socks that people wear, that if you are a musafir, then you can wear it for 3 days and three nights. And if you are a muqeem, you wear it for 1 day and one night. So if the wearing of socks was harmful, then Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam would not have permitted the use of the socks for 3 days and three nights. I mean, surely he's not going to stay awake for 3 days and three nights. He's going to sleep. So he'll sleep with his socks and he's going to get up with his socks. Look at their thinking, that as Muslims and as believers, first they accept the research of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the hukam of Nabi alayhi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the direction and command of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. After that, whatever they can understand or they can fathom out, well and good. But if they can't, they still will say that whatever Nabi alayhi sallallahu alaihi wasallam said is the truth and nothing but the truth, because sooner or later these people will do some research and they'll come to the same conclusion that Nabi alayhi sallallahu alaihi wasallam came to. So many things they have changed their whole research and their conclusions, and now they have said exactly that which Nabi alayhi sallallahu alaihi wasallam was saying 1400 years ago. In Nigeria they did research on the miswak and what conclusions they came to. Same thing what Nabi alayhi sallallahu alaihi wasallam mentioned more than 1400 years ago. Some people did a research in France on these type of issues. There's a whole lot of things that have been researched on the sunnats of Nabi alayhi sallallahu alaihi wasallam. There's a whole article where every sunnat of Nabi alayhi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, what are the benefits in the light of modern day research. So now will we wait for the modern day research to tell us and inform us that there is some benefit in this sunnah, that's why you must now acknowledge it and you must apply it. Otherwise we won't accept it. That means the modern day research must tell us that this is right, there is benefit, then we will do it. And if it tells us no, there's no benefit, we'll leave it out. If you're going to go by that route, then that is not belief in ghaib, that is not belief in Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam as being Nabi of Allah ta'ala. That is belief in your sight and your eyes, that if your eyes see something, then you believe in it. And if your eyes don't see, then you don't believe in it. Whereas we believe that whatever Nabi alayhi sallallahu alayhi wasallam was informed by Allah ta'ala, and he informed the ummah, then we accept it, that there is definitely a million and one benefits in it. It's afterwards, if science can also substantiate and support or give you some kind of information, then we got no fight with science. Make use of science. There's nothing wrong with science. But science must get you closer to Allah ta'ala. That surgeon who is slicing the body all the time and seeing the qudrat of Allah ta'ala, how the heart, liver, lung all connected and how it's functioning and working. Now if he says he's a very great surgeon, the best in the world, and he has already operated on 1 million people, but he doesn't believe in Allah ta'ala, he doesn't believe in akhirat, he doesn't believe in jannat and jahannam, then we will say that that science for him is not knowledge but it is ignorance, because he hasn't recognized the creator, he hasn't recognized the one who gave him that chip in his brains to be able to understand how to undertake that surgery and perform operations. So what we will say is that whatever Nabi alayhi sallallahu alayhi wasallam said, if there is any doubt, it is on our side. There's no doubt in what he said is the truth. Yes, sometimes there are fabricated hadiths. There are many hadiths which we call mawzu. Some are da'if and some are mawzu. Now we're talking about the mawzu hadiths, which were fabricated. There were enemies of Islam who sat down and wrote hadiths. And they just said, qala qala Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and they made some hadiths. And the purpose of that was that they came up with such kind of philosophy or issue that any sensible person will not accept it. To him it will not make sense that Nabi alayhi sallallahu alayhi wasallam could have said something like this. There is no chain that connects to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. There is no transmission from the Sahaba ikram radiyallahu anhum ajma'in. It was just somebody said this and then it goes away to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. So the muhaddiseen, Allah ta'ala must give them jazaya khair, that they did not leave it at that. Each and every hadith they checked the transmitters, the chain, if it is authentic or it is not authentic. So like that there are so many people who have written kitabs on mawzu'at, where the people are doing the science of hadith. Then there are so many kitabs which are called, which have the hadiths which are mawzu, fabricated hadiths in there. So those scholars who did that research, they did a great favor upon us. Now in that you will find many hadiths which are fabricated. For example, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said Mao Zamzam, the water of Zamzam, is for whatever niyat purpose you drink it, then Allah Ta'ala will fulfill that niyat, fulfill that purpose, whatever niyat you drink it with. So this person fabricated one and he said, Al Bazinjan Brinjal. Your brinjal, now all the hakim say that it is not a very good thing to eat, and if you eat it, then how you must cook it and how it should be prepared so that you don't get the harm of eating brinjal. But it is a curry, it is jais, it is to eat, but for health reasons it is not something that is recommended by hakims. So now he said that for whatever niyat, tima okela lahu, for whatever niyat you eat it, just as zamzam with whatever niyat you drink it, tima shoreba lahu, in the same way here, bazinjan with whatever niyat you eat it, your niyat will be fulfilled. Now that was a fabrication. Now when people saw that as a hadith, then they said, how can this be a hadith? Well, definitely it is not a hadith. So what I am saying is that those things which are proven to be from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, there is a chain that's connecting to Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. So in those hadiths you find mention of many, many things. So we always conclude that whatever Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam mentioned to be good, then we accept it as good. What he said is bad, is harmful, is sinful, then we accept it to be sinful and harmful and haram. So that is where this issue comes in, that these are psychologists and psychiatrists and all kinds of people. Now they are asking and doing research mostly with those who are non-Muslims. Now those non-Muslims, indeed for them sometimes it is that frustration, and that they call it natural instinct, and there's nothing you can fulfill it, and they can talk about a lot of things, but they've got no belief in Allah and His Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So we won't accept their conclusions.
Ages between say 9 and 20, before the marriage state, where the students or the boys have got those, that knowledge of hadiths and...
If they haven't got, then they must at least accept whatever Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam has said. They must be educated to understand that you are a Muslim, and this is what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam has prohibited, so you must stay away from it. That much is sufficient at that stage. To give them all the dalils and proofs and all that, they're not ready to understand that. But just as we tell the child of 7 years of age that you must make namaz, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam says when the child is 7 years of age, you must tell him to make namaz. And when he's 10 years of age, you must even give him one to slap if he's not making namaz. But of course, it mustn't be a child abuse kind of thing. Now why? Now 7-year-old child, can you explain to the child the philosophy of namaz? You can't. What will the child understand philosophy of namaz? But the child understands that namaz is farz 5 times a day. So now from now you are instilling into the child that namaz has been made farz 5 times a day, so you must make namaz 5 times a day. Now as far as the dalils and the proofs and all the details are concerned, as the age will catch up, the person will understand. So in this matter also, if they are 15, 16, 18, then surely they can understand that those simple facts that have been mentioned in the Quran and the hadith.
He locks himself in the room after school and he plays with the pulley. What can I tell him? And he's got that instinct. How did he get it? That's awesome news.
Show them more television. Show them more videos. Give them more magazines. No, that's what I'm trying to tell you. That's what I'm saying. That you show them all those things. That is where they're getting the instinct. Where else are they getting it from? I mean, those little children that are raping, from where are they learning that? And besides raping, all the other incidents that we are hearing of crime, of little children that are doing it now, how many articles have been written that after watching the TV, they tried to, you know, imitate, and they tried to do the same thing, and all copycat crimes, exactly like that. In fact, all these thefts, all the new methods of theft, and hold-ups, and hijackings, and murders, and killings, and all that, where is it coming from? We all know it fully well. But it's just that our nafs does not allow us to get rid of that shaitan box from the house. So we are allowing all the shaitaniyat and influence of devils to come into the homes, and then we sit and cry. But this is exactly what I have mentioned in many bayans of mine, and I've repeated those incidents. I've got many, many without exaggeration, but those 2-3 I always repeat so that it can put some sense into those parents who are not willing to take any kind of advice from anything else, that this young girl from one of our Muslim schools, she said that she watched a certain film in which the father commits incest with the daughter. And after watching that film, she says, my father is a good person, he's a namazi, and I know 100% that he hasn't got that kind of ideas in him. And I myself am at a Muslim school, and I don't think in that line, that's not my nature, and it is burning me inside why these thoughts are coming. But she says, every time this handsome father of mine walks into the house, na'uzubillah, she says I feel like committing incest with him. Now where did she pick it up from? She says, after watching this certain film, and she even writes the name of that film and who the actor was and what he did in there. Then that other young person, he tells me, he says, well, I watched a certain film, and after that, he says, I got such kind of hatred for my father that I just feel like taking the gun and blasting his head. For no reason, for no apparent reason. He said, but that is my nature now. I just can't sort of stomach him. The moment he comes into the house, and I want to take the gun and shoot his head. And if that was not enough, then he says that one night I actually took the gun. If it had not been for Allah Ta'ala's protection, he says, I would not know what I could have done. And when did that happen? He says, after watching a certain film. Then there are cases where they say after watching a certain cartoon movie or film, this happened and that happened. It's always after something that took place. And there are so many other recorded incidents in America, in Europe and in England and all, where they just came out of the cinema and after that they, what happened after they had seen certain things on the screen. So we all know the causes, we all know where the problem is. But our nafs, again the same thing, the mizaj of the nafs is the mizaj of Jahannam, that you just can't stop it. You know all the harm in the world. The person who is smoking, you can give him all the research in the world on the harm of smoking. Does he restrain himself from smoking? In fact, he will fight with the government that why are you restricting our desire to smoke in the aeroplanes and in the public places and other places. It's our money, we're buying cigarette and we're damaging our own health. Why must worry? Who does not know that this committing adultery or going to this prostitute quarters and all that is very, very dangerous? How much billions of rands have been and dollars have been spent on this AIDS, information on AIDS? So has that now made everybody give up their bad habits? So that is the mizaj of the nafs. So we have to educate them that this is halal, this is haram, and whatever, create the love of Allah Ta'ala in their hearts, that whatever Allah Ta'ala says is halal is good. Whatever He prohibits you and says is haram, then there's definitely evil in there, there's something that's harmful in there. So that little child from that stage, whatever you teach that child, the child is going to do. The child is an imitator. Exactly what you do, he is going to do, or she is going to do. How many homes we know these little children, they're just 1 year, 2 years old, one and a half, 2 year old. But because the mother is a namazi, the father is a namazi, at home they're making some tahajjud, ishraq or some other namazes. So that little child will put his topi, bring on small musalla and stand there and Allahu Akbar, up and down, up and down. Now what does the child know? Is that namaz? It's not namaz, but the child is imitating those parents. I was walking in an aisle in one of the supermarkets doing some shopping to buy some groceries or something. And on the aisle, I came to the corner, and on the other side of the aisle, now that child doesn't even know I'm on this side or who's here or nothing. And I can hear Allah, Allah kaisa pyara naam hai, aashiko ka meena aur jaam hai. Loudly the child is singing away, Allah, Allah kaisa pyara naam hai. So he crossed like that, so the father came in the front. He said, this child, you sit down in the car, Allah, Allah kaisa pyara naam hai. He said, we go to home, Allah, Allah kaisa pyara naam hai. I said, where do you pick it up? He said, no, with his mother, he goes to the madrasa there. So your zikr program, it hears it, and the tape, I've always got the tape on in the car at home. So this little child now, one and a half, two year old child, is singing away, Allah, Allah, kaisa pyara naam. So it is just depends on what we feed them. Whatever we feed them, that is what it's going to play back. What you put into the tape recorder, that's what it plays back. Now whatever I spoke went into the tape. Now when you put the button on, it's exactly what I said will come out from there. So if I swear, na'uzubillah, then swearing will come out from there. If I curse, then cursing will come out from there. If I read, then reading will come out from there. And if I sing, then singing will come out from there. So just like that, into the children, whatever we are going to pump and what we are going to feed them with, the type of things that we are going to show them, the places we are going to take them and tell them to have a good time. Like that young person, the father used to take him to the casino, and he told me this himself. He said, my father used to take me to the casino and he used to go and gamble away, but he used to give me a few rands and say that, look, you know, this machine's here, this 2 rand, 5 rand, or whatever it is, just for the fun of it, you can pass your time this side. And then they used to go away onto the other side with the chips and all. He says, that little start in life of gambling, today he says, I can't give up this habit. And millions, the person, I don't know, over 1 or 2 million he lost over a period of time. Now big businesses, they don't even realize what is going. But the fact is that it was that habit that that little father gave money for fun now became an addiction. So whatever those little children are doing, 99% of the time it is what they see outside or what they see inside or what they're watching on the TV or on the movie or in the internet webs. Now whatever they are seeing, the mind is becoming polluted and clouded, and then there is frustration that builds up until you don't do that which you have seen. So this is where the problem is. And the cure for that again, or the lessons that we take in this month of Ramadan, is actually the cure for that. And that is that in this month of Ramadan, now we are sitting here, we are not eating, we are not drinking, there's water here, it can be very hot, my throat is getting dry. If there was water here at some other time, I would have taken it and drunk it. Now what is it that's restraining me from taking the water? What is it that's keeping us away from eating and drinking? Nothing except one thing, that my Allah is watching. It is Allah's hukam. That is why I'm accepting it. So just as we do that for those things which are halal, then that which is haram, we must stay away from it even more in the month of Ramadan and outside Ramadan. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us all the tawfiq of making amal. وآخر دعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين.